Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Tammy Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Tammy Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Tammy Erickson, president of the Engenera Innovation Network, shares with us her insights on generational relationships within the workplace and the actions Gen Xers should take to ready and position themselves to be the next group of corporate and civic leaders. So now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Tammy Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X, and president of the Engenera Innovation Network, a thought leader in enterprise collaboration, providing hundreds of global corporations with key insights and senior advisory services focused on collaboration strategy, enterprise engagement, and enabling technologies. Tammy's compelling views of the future are based on extensive research on changing demographics and employee values, and, most recently, on how successful organizations work. She's an award-winning author, having co-authored 5 Harvard Business Review articles, including the McKinsey Award winner, It's Time to Retire Retirement, and the book, Workforce Crisis, How to Beat the Coming Shortage of Skills and Talent. Tammy, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thanks, Nathan. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I don't think there's a book that I could hardly relate to more because I am a Gen Xer. And, you know, sometimes as we were going through, and I think as the questions we're going to have later we'll get to, sometimes I couldn't tell if I should laugh or cry about being a Gen Xer.
Well, there are some elements like that, aren't there?
There certainly are. There certainly are. Well, since we're going to spend our time talking predominantly about Gen X tonight, and you know, I imagine our audiences like me, we've read a lot of different articles and books on the generations in the workforce. I find that they typically always define each generation as being a little different in a period of time. And so just to kind of establish the framework for our conversation, would you mind defining for us, as you have in What's Next Gen X, who you see as belonging to Generation X, and then what personal characteristics and traits those Gen Xers share?
Sure. And I would say that it's legitimate that the boundaries of the generations would be a little fuzzy. I've had a lot of people who are born probably within 5 years of any so-called dividing line tell me they feel like they have a foot in both generations. Mm-hmm. So it's not a hard and fast line. The definition of Gen X based on birth rates, in other words, after the big boom in birth rates when the rates fell and we had fewer people being born each year,
sure,
would place the generation between 1965 and 1979. So in other words, people in their 30s today through early 40s.
Okay.
In fact, as I talk about in the book, the attitudes started to change a little bit earlier than that. People mm-hmm. who were born in the early 60s, say from 1961 on, tend to feel more like Xers than they do boomers. And so I think probably the safest definition is to say roughly people born in the 60s and 70s who are in their 30s and pretty much 40s today.
And that is, I would say, something I have seen a lot. I've seen a lot of definition at, say, 60 to 80. And in fact, you mentioned a very notable person that in that expanded age range would be a Gen Xer, and that would be President Obama, who was born.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I noticed when I was making speeches to different audiences, I used to say Xers were born in 65 onward, and nobody argued with me. And all of a sudden, about the time Obama became prominent on the national scene, I would have hands shoot up as soon as I said that, and people whose birthdays were in the 61, 62 range would say, no, we refuse to be classified as a boomer. We're Xers.
Okay. Absolutely. And I guess I've never heard anyone define or characterize President Obama as being a Gen Xer, but he's always had, I guess, to me anyway, that sort of feel because of his just extended use of technology and just his style came across as a Gen Xer.
I think that too. I certainly have never heard him say that he believes himself to be a member of any one particular generation. But I think his use of technology, and another thing that I see about him that I find interesting is his willingness to tolerate multiple points of view, rather than trying to drive for one single right answer, to be able to say, let's have these multiple points of view on the table and come up with compromises and so forth, I think is something that's a fairly classic Gen X characteristic.
Okay. Well, you know, on that same line, what do you see as being the unique or special contributions that Gen Xers as a group offer to the marketplace or, in the case of President Obama, to the government as an organization?
Well, one of the dominant characteristics I found from my research on Gen X is that they Xers are very self-reliant. If I had to choose one single adjective, that would be the one I'd choose for Gen X. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from a childhood in many cases where they saw a number of different types of institutions either dissolve or, in their minds, let people down. They saw corporations laying people off. They saw marriages ending in divorce. They saw the Challenger space shuttle disaster. I mean, lots of different situations where big, powerful institutions that aren't supposed to fail, failed. And so many Xers, I think, interpreted that as a sense of, boy, I better be able to take care of myself if something bad were to happen. That sense of if something bad were to happen, planning for contingencies, keeping options on the table, is probably the single most dominant characteristic that I found across Gen X. And it's very different from boomers, who tend to be much more focused on single point outcomes. In fact, one Xer said it to me probably the most articulately. He said, you boomers, and I have to confess I'm a boomer, you boomers are busy climbing the beanstalk. You're just climbing as high as you can go. And it's getting narrower and narrower as you get toward the top, and the wind is blowing and the beanstalk is swaying, but you don't care. You just want to get as high as you can go. He said, we Xers hate that. We're down at the bottom. We're planting more beanstalks. We're trying to make the one we have thicker and sturdier. He said, we value multiple beanstalks rather than how high we can get on the one that we happen to be clinging to at the moment.
Sure, sure. As you were relating the formative year impact events, you know, I can distinctly remember where I was when the Challenger accident happened, because I was in the auditorium of my fifth grade school, and we were watching it live on TV.
Yeah, very interesting to me. I have to confess that when I started the research, I put together a list of historical events that I thought would have been important to Xers in their formative years, which, by the way, tend to be about age 11 to 13. Those are the most important years in forming those conceptual ideas. So it would have been right around junior high age or a little younger for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't even put a Challenger on the list. Because to me, as a boomer, you know, it was something that happened while I was at work. I came home at night. I saw it on the television. It was sad. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make a big impression on me. And every single Xer that I interviewed instantly said, where's Challenger?
Yeah.
The minute they saw the list, where's Challenger?
Yeah.
Because it did have such an important impact on your generation.
I remember because it was the middle of the day, as you mentioned. We were all in the auditorium to watch the first teacher go into space. I remember that night watching, it was Dan Rather on the CBS Evening News, over and over and over again as he was describing the event and how the accident actually happened. And then, of course, President Reagan's words to the country that went out afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But as many people talk about remembering where they were when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, which I don't remember because I wasn't born at that time, I remember very distinctly where I was when Challenger happened.
That's right. So. And the generation younger than you, by the way, the Ys, mm-hmm. they will remember 9/11.
Yes.
Or Columbine. They will remember acts of terrorism. So you remember instances of institutional failure.
Mm-hmm.
Many people in your generation had parents who were laid off, which was shocking at the time. The 1980s was the first decade when people were actually laid off. Prior to that, companies tended to use furloughs. In other words, go away for a few weeks, and when business picks up, we'll call you and you'll come back. So the 1980s was the first time that companies said to people, just go away. And that was a shocking event. And again, something that your generation watched as kids and formed your impressions of how much you should rely on corporations from watching that experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that's why the book spoke so much to me, because as I read that, I can clearly see how much my parents relied on companies and how my approach has been very different. It's been much more self-reliant, having to have my skills at their peak. You mentioned Gen Xers being overeducated. I'm guilty as charged. I've got laundry lists of degrees and certifications. And it's all out of just that fear of, hey, well, you know, on any given day of the week, the company's going to say, thank you, but we don't need you anymore. And I got to be ready to move and be self-reliant to do so.
Yeah, I found that from almost every Xer I interviewed, that kind of sense of keeping multiple options open and continuing to learn as well to make sure you are fresh with your skills.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned that I was saddened by some of the things in the book, and I wanted to ask if you could convey to our audience the historical positioning of Generation X and why they as a generation seem to be faced with some greater challenges. And you even mentioned that as a generation, they're probably the worst hit by the current economic recession.
That's right. I mean, first of all, imagine that just in terms of numbers, by the time Gen X entered the workforce, they were entering on the heels of a massive boomer bulge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people say the boomers took up not only all the good jobs, but all the bad jobs, too. I mean, the boomers had all the jobs because there were so many of them. And so Xers were instantly in a position where they were having to scrap for the remaining jobs. Then the bad luck dimension begins that they also entered during the recession. So by the time the 1990s rolled around and the Xer entered the market, we were in a pretty general recession around much of the country and much of the world. Xers bought houses at the peak of the housing market, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Housing prices driven up by, again, the big bulge of boomers who'd bought a lot of houses, driven prices up. And by the time the Xers jumped on, they were buying them at very high prices. More Xers bought houses at comparable ages than did boomers. So again, you were attracted by the promises of low interest rates and so forth. More Xers jumped into the housing market. So in a lot of ways, there was almost a snowballing effect of unlucky timing that has plagued the generation. A few other things. It turns out that as a result, Xers are the first generation to actually have lower net worth than your parents' generation.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yes, but again, in fact, not making me happy.
Well, you've been hit by those housing prices and so forth, and so you have lower net worth. Now, I would say Xers have higher household incomes than the boomers did at comparable ages. But the trick to that is that it's because in most cases both spouses are working. So a much higher percentage of Xer women were working than boomer women were at comparable ages, and as a result the average household income for Xers is higher than it was for boomers.
Right. And as you mentioned in the book, it's almost become a status symbol now if one of the two spouses can stay at home with the children.
That's right. Yeah. And that plays into another important characteristic I found of Xers, which is Xers, I think, are incredibly dedicated parents in a way that is fascinatingly different to me than what I found when I studied boomers. I would say boomers are very dedicated to our children's success. We'll do just about anything to help our children be successful. But Xers are dedicated to being successful parents.
Okay.
So one generation wants to having successful children, the next generation to being successful parents. And I think for many Xers, that translates into an ideal of what a successful parent does, the amount of time one would spend, the amount of structure one would provide. Xers tend to have very clear points of view about what a parent should do. And that, I think, has caused issues for Xers in corporate life because in many cases, of course, if the corporation pushes for people to work longer hours, it rubs right up against that sense of what they should be doing in order to stand up to their high standards of parenting.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, I've seen maybe in the boomers that I work with, there's such a high dedication to organization that sometimes there's not an understanding when the Xers want to push back and want to not work into the night and the like and have some time for family.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that I think you're putting your finger really on the most important benefit, I believe, of looking at the generations at all, and that is to develop that sense of empathy with each other, because it's very easy to encounter any experience in the workplace or in home life or whatever, and the way you look at it and the way I look at it may be completely different based on the generational lens that we're looking through. And that's a problem, but an even bigger problem is when I judge you by your reaction, and that's what we see so often in the workplace. So the Xer says, I don't want to work late. The boomer not only doesn't get it, but they jump to a negative conclusion about why the Xer would have said that. Maybe that the Xer isn't as committed to the corporation or some such excuse.
Yes.
When in fact that's completely, A, in most cases, untrue and certainly unfair, because what the Xer is really doing is expressing the degree to which that request rubs up against another value that the Xer holds very dear, which is their commitment to what they perceive as important in parenting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to extend that into maybe my next question is, we've talked about the circumstances surrounding the formative years as shaping the values and behaviors of individuals within a generational group. I'm wondering if generational groups also maybe behave a little bit in what I'll call self-interest. And what I'm referring to in this case is, and just things I hear in my work with various organizations, there's a sense for boomers that there's a high value for, I'll call it, experience, so time in the workforce, and they're pushing off the Gen Xers, which we've already kind of mentioned that they might be a bit overeducated. You have Gen Xers that, of course, are resenting the boomers for pushing them off and providing, in some cases, again, as we've talked about, a bit of a bottleneck because they've got all the good positions, and at this point we're talking about the senior management positions. But then we also see the Gen Xers scoffing at the Gen Ys and their desire to move up the corporate ladder because of a lesser degree of experience and education. And then we have the Gen Ys who tout their tech savviness, the recency of their education, they're on the cutting edge, and highlighting that as reasons that they should be advanced. So it seems there's always a bit of self-interest almost behind the scenes. And I kind of wonder if that didn't exist also when we had, instead of boomers, Xers, and Gen Ys in the workforce, if it happened when we had traditionalists, boomers, and Gen Xers in the workforce kind of similarly, and if that doesn't play into some of the behaviors we see from the generations.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's, of course, to some extent human nature, that whenever mm-hmm. we're in the position, we tend to see it through the eyes of that position. So I'm sure younger people for centuries have felt impatient at wanting to take on more than their elders felt was appropriate, and elders have probably felt, again, for centuries, that the value of wisdom is not properly respected. But I do think there's some important differences with this particular combination of generations.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one of the interesting things is that if I had to choose an adjective for boomers, I know a lot of people would say, well, it's idealism or something of that sort. And I recognize those characteristics in boomers. But the single characteristic that I would choose would be competitive.
Okay.
Boomers basically grew up in a very crowded world. In fact, again, you may be too young to remember this, but I went to school in temporary Quonset huts out behind the high school because there weren't enough seats. The communities around the country simply weren't able to build new schools fast enough to keep up with this huge bulge of kids that was kind of descending upon the school system. And so boomers had to go to school in Quonset huts. And the implicit message that I think that planted in every boomer brain is this is a zero-sum game. You win, I lose. It's musical chairs. There aren't enough chairs. So I've got to run really fast and try to bump you out of that next chair.
Sure.
So boomers have, I think, a very legitimate reason to view the world that way. And that's again, the empathetic point that I'm trying to make is it's not that they're bad people. They really grew up in a world that was literally too small. And so that sense of competing for a chair was a literal reality for boomers when they were kids and as they entered college and so forth. And it means that holding on to those high-level chairs, that's the point I'm getting to,
okay.
has an emotional connotation for boomers that I think is hard for Xers to necessarily appreciate. In other words, I don't think boomers are holding on to those high-level seats, those executive roles, necessarily because they're trying to be mean to Xers. It's because every ounce of their being says, hold on to the highest rung, compete. That's what boomers are trained to do, compete. So they would almost compete with anybody.
Sure.
nothing about Xers, per se. It's holding on to it. So, you know, I think that's hard for Xers to understand, just as it's very hard for boomers to get what exes are even talking about when they say, you know, they want to not work so many hours or not take the transfer to Topeka because they're not interested in relocating or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's just to a boomer a jaw-dropping kind of response, because boomers would always have said yes.
Certainly. Oh, absolutely. And I guess I see that happening in the work environments that I've been in, is when it's just as you described, when there's an opportunity and it's offered in Topeka or any other place, then yeah, the Xers tend to be a little more hesitant if that location doesn't suit their other values, typically a family.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the fun things I sometimes do when I'm talking to a large group is I'll say, boomers, listen to this sentence and tell me what I said.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like you to relocate. And without fail, I've done this with hundreds of audiences, they will shout out from the audience, I've been promoted. So those three words, we'd like you to, or whatever it is, we'd like you to relocate,
yeah,
translate into, I've been promoted. That's what a boomer hears. And, of course, then if I say, Xers, what did you hear? Well, an Xer will say, I've heard, gee, I must have done something wrong.
Exactly.
You know, what's the hidden message? Is there a way out? I mean, it's a your ears are hearing very different things.
Oh, yeah.
From that same sentence.
Yeah.
And
oh,
that's
and
the generational lens at work.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely amazing. It is absolutely amazing. Well, Tammy, you talk about, and you show better than what I've seen anyone lay out graphically in What's Next Gen X, the disparity in the birth rates in the population of the various generations. And in my work experience, which has been primarily focused around power generation utilities, to be honest, we've done demographic studies, and Gen X is almost totally devoid from the entire industry. I mean, it kind of comes down to where you'd start seeing Gen Xers in the early 40s, and there's just a drop, and there's nobody. And then we're starting to see some hiring of Gen Y because all the boomers are now retiring. In fact, in this case, in the next 10 years, about 80% of the entire workforce, which is represented by boomers today, are expected to retire. My question is, do you see companies faced with that kind of challenge where, because maybe of the small size of the Gen X workforce, maybe the stability that the boomers have provided in that portion of the workforce, that a company now is faced with this natural evolution that is going to leave them with a rapidly loss of experience and leadership? And if so, what recommendations do you give those organizations' leaders as to how they can deal with this?
Well, I do see it. And it is a little, it varies by industry, I would have to say, because,
okay,
again,
okay,
Xers tended to gravitate to certain industries. Xers are, for example, overpopulated in the IT industry and IT sectors. You might add that, by the way, to the list of, you know, unlucky circumstances, because, of course, that meant Xers were the most likely to have their jobs outsourced when the outsourcing wave took up.
Certainly.
But at any rate, so in some sectors like IT, Xers perhaps are overrepresented, but in many, power utilities and so forth, they're very much underrepresented. So what should companies do? Well, the first and most obvious answer is hold on to the Xers you have. And that's, you know, my first level of concern, because I think a lot of boomers take for granted that the Xers are just hopping up and down, waiting to move into those leadership chairs and will be there whenever they choose to hand them over. And that's not necessarily a safe assumption. Many of the Xers I interviewed confided in me that they have no intention of taking those jobs, that they're just kind of biding their time or saving their money, but their plans are to leave the corporation and do something, whether it's entrepreneurial or small company oriented, et cetera.
Okay.
So companies need to wake up and really tune into their Xers and make sure they're going to have the ones they think they're going to have in the first place. They need to think about the kinds of career paths that Xers would find attractive. And for most Xers, you know, the bottom line is don't box them in. Don't push them out on a tenuous limb of specialization where they feel like, you know, they're holding down one job, but if anything were to happen to that job, there's nothing else for them in the corporation. Companies need to think about broadening career paths and making sure people understand that if this job doesn't work out, there are six other options that would be very valuable ones for them within the overall company. So those are some of the important elements, I think, of companies holding on to the Xers that they have.
Okay.
From there, you know, it depends a little bit on the type of skill set that they need. For some companies, the next logical step is, frankly, to think about whether they can hold on to the boomers a bit longer. I know you don't always want to hear that, but in some cases with highly specialized expertise, that may be the answer if there just aren't enough Xers who can take those jobs. In some cases, you may be able to change the company programs in a way that would make the company more attractive to Xers and bring some in. But the overall point is companies need to think about this. They need to develop a strategy for how they're going to fill those leadership ranks down the road.
Okay. Oh, certainly. Now, kind of down that same line of thought, because of the population of the Generation X is relatively small, do you see that generation as being at risk of almost irrelevancy in corporate America or even the government?
No, I don't. I don't think they'll be irrelevant because for two reasons. I mean, one is probably the most important is that I do think Xers have a very important perspective that fits well with the kinds of challenges that organizations, whether they're business or governmental, are facing today. We live in such an uncertain world with so many unknowns and really variables that one just can't control, with so many diverse opinions. And Xers have a set of skills for dealing with options and multiple challenges and diverse opinions that I think will make them excellent leaders over the years ahead.
Okay. Well, Tammy, what then would you say or suggest that Gen Xers do now to ensure they remain relevant in their organizations?
Well, the book contains quite a few suggestions. A few of them I would emphasize are, one, surround yourself with the context that you need for success. So Xers are good at networking and tend to maintain good contacts with friends. But think about that in the work world. Do you have relationships with the people that you need in order to do your work successfully? And build those networks now. Think about the company, the corporation, as a bit like a candy store. I know salaries are frozen in many companies today, but that doesn't mean there still aren't a lot of things that would be beneficial to you to ask for. And so look for things like perhaps a new skill that you'd like to learn or a opportunity to work in a different division where you might pick up some new capabilities that would serve you well down the road. And see if you can't do some of those kinds of opportunities in lieu of perhaps a salary increase during these difficult times.
Okay.
Think about, and probably I would say the most important piece of advice, is simply don't assume that your boomer boss has a clue what you want. Don't assume that they're thinking the same way you're thinking. So if you have a particular way you like to see your career unfolding, you need to speak up and make that very clear because chances are very high that they would never dream that that's what you want.
Absolutely. Are there any other actions that a Gen Xer should take to ensure that they're ready and very well positioned for a senior leadership opportunity if that's what they aspire to?
Well, one of the things that I would strongly recommend at this point in Xer's careers, and I do think the midpoint of a person's career is a time to make this transition, is really to play to your strengths and to emphasize and build your what I would think of as your brand reputation within mm-hmm. your company. So earlier in your career, for example, you may have been trying to fix your weaknesses and work on things you weren't particularly good at. But now's the time to say, okay, we've kind of been through that. Let's pick out what we're really good at and find roles that would emphasize that and play to our strengths. Look for ways to augment your brand, for example, by choosing a community activity, if you would like to be active in your community.
Sure.
That reinforces the kinds of things you want to be known for at work. So let's say, for example, you think you're a very good project manager, really dependable, etc. Why not volunteer for something in the community, like, I don't know, managing the school building project? Because that would give you an opportunity, one, to learn, but two, in the work environment, casually to talk about the fact that you're running the school building project for your community. It reinforces in your colleagues' and supervisors' minds the fact that that's what you're really good at and what you enjoy. And it builds your brand and reputation and helps it, makes it easier for them to think about how to move you on into new dimensions.
Absolutely. And I guess in my experience, I have found the employers I work with will often, I don't know that credit is the right word, but credit you with leadership experience if it comes from one of those significant community building opportunities, just as if it was a leadership position within the organization, maybe like on a special project.
Yes, and, I think that's exactly right. I've seen that many times.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tammy, before we close, I did want to ask if you would tell us a little bit about your website, which is www.TammyErickson.com, because of the abundance of additional resources on talent, innovation, and then what was termed on the website as the intelligent organization.
Well, I do try to put a lot of information there, and I invite anyone to go there and download papers or articles I've written. And the other feature on the website is there is an Ask Tammy dimension, and I pay a lot of attention to that. So if you'd like to ask me a question, whether it's about your career or just something that I've been talking about here, by all means, go there, ask the question, and I will answer it and post the answer on the website.
Oh, great. Yeah, I visited the website, and I love the materials there. We'll put a link in the article that accompanies this podcast so that our listeners can very quickly get to your website and enjoy the materials and benefit from them also.
That's great. Thank you.
Great. Well, Tammy, I want to thank you, not just for sharing your time, but just the outstanding insights that you've shared with us on Generation X very specifically, but on generational relationships in the workplace as a whole. I've thoroughly enjoyed What's Next Gen X because of the key actions that you prescribe for the upcoming Gen X group of workers. I'm being one of them, and the things that they can do to position themselves to be the next leaders, both in our corporate and our civic world. I also really enjoyed the beginning of the book where you did talk about the various generations and how they perceive each other and the tips and advice that you give the reader as to how they can work with members of the other generation so that they better understand the other's perspectives. I found that helped me a lot in understanding many of the folks, whether they'd be younger or older than I am in the workforce. So thank you very much for joining us and sharing your insights with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you very much for your kind words about the book. Nothing makes an author happier than to feel that it's been useful. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Tammy Erickson for being with us today and sharing her insights on generational relationships within the workplace. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Tammy Erickson and What's Next Gen X at www.tammyerickson.com. Until next time, so long.